Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. I want to speak about being desperate for the glory of God, as I've been talking about already. And, you know, those that hunger and thirst after righteousness will be filled. I mean, think about that. Jesus tells us right then, the very first thing that he's telling us on the Sermon on the Mount, the constitution of the church, he says, listen, hunger is what moves me, moves the Father to respond to you. You have to want me and want what I have to offer. You have to want to be with me. And truly, it's amazing to me how, you know, people like to come together and they don't even really want to be together. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have these things called family reunions that people go to that near one of them wants to be together, but something just kind of drives them together, and they act like they're doing each other a favor by showing up, as secretly they actually despise one another and they're judging one another. And it's like, that's something maybe you grew up with. It's called dysfunction, maybe, you know, and every family's not like that. But understand, the family of God's not like that. That you got to want to be there. You got to want to be there. And to be invited is an honor. And to show up without the salvation garments on, it's not going to be good. But they'll let you show up.
That's right.
And to show up at a family reunion with God is a good thing. You have to want, though. You have to want to show up. You're like, you're getting ready. You're excited. You're going to be abiding that morning, or you're going to be where you're gathering, or you're going to listen, or you know, you see things that you know that your loved one, Jesus, does not like, and you turn your head because you don't want to offend him. You choose things differently. You hang out differently with folks, and you don't tolerate conversations, and you change your media choices. Why? Because you want to be in relationship with him. You hunger and thirst for him. And he says, this is what he said. Of all the things that Jesus could say, he says, those who hunger and thirst. He didn't say, you know, women who hunger and thirst, men who hunger and thirst, children who hunger and thirst, religious people who hunger and thirst, Charles Seymour who hungers and thirsts, just, you know, and it's those. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you with those? I'm with those.
Yeah.
Are you with those?
I'm with those.
Are you with those? I'm with those. And by the way, you're of those, which means this applies to you too. If you hunger and thirst, it's sort of like this. Think about this. Have you ever eaten at a buffet? If you've been to America, you have eaten at a buffet.
Mm, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. We call them troughs. Yeah. Hey, if you own one out there, they're cool. You know, it's actually self-control.
That's right.
And a low price. If you don't eat like a cow, then you'll give us a lower price. Anyway, so you eat all this food, you know, all this lettuce. Right, they have lettuce on those things.
They have lettuce bars, yeah.
I used to remember years ago. So yeah, I'm on a diet. I eat a salad bar, and I finally went to the salad bar. I was like, my goodness, that has more food than the entire city that I come from. Anyway, but just imagine you eat until your heart's content and beyond your stomach's ability to hold that food. Just imagine that you're just so full, and then somebody comes up with your most favorite dessert. I mean, it's your favorite. I mean, it used to just, as a kid, you liked it maybe, whatever. I mean, taste buds change. Like yours would have hot sauce on it if it was a dessert.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Ice cream and hot sauce. Butter pecan and hot sauce. But, you know, and it's something that just would always make you want to get it. But you're so full from the buffet. You're so full from eating all the other food that when this food that tops your food chart shows up, with all the things that gives you these great feelings or whatever, and you just joy brings back childhood, whatever. I don't know what your taste buds do for you. But anyway, that you're not hungry for it. It's not that particular food doesn't have the same quality it always has. It doesn't mean that if you weren't full, you wouldn't have that desire for it. It's just the fact you can't hold nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't have a drawing on you. It doesn't, you're not saying, I want some of that. And the church is so full of the buffet of the world, so much dark media and so many dark relationships and so much prognosticated dark-sided news with no light. That it's like, yeah, I know that sounds good. I remember once I've tasted of the Lord and he was good. I remember that I've seen other people that have tasted this and they said that he's good. And just right now, you know, right now. And it's like, you know why you feel that way? If you profess to be a believer, it's because you're full of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You filled yourself up with sin.
Right.
You've went into the ways of Egypt. And you're under bondage. But you know what? If you start fasting and praying, if you start saying no to dark choices in media, saying no to those who choose to take advantage of your relationship around you to bring darkness in your presence, saying no to those who want to be able to fill you up with that which separates you from intimacy with God, then you'll just get hungry. They'll just get hungry. They'll get hungry for God.
Mm-hmm.
I think Proverbs says that, I believe it says, even to a hungry man, a full man loaves honey, but even to a hungry man, even the bitter things
taste sweet.
Mm-hmm. And even the parts of God's truths that you avoided, you'll be saying, you know what, God, whatever you want for me, Lord, whatever you have for me, Jesus. And, you know, and then once you just have a little bit of taste and you're hungry for him, then you say, you know, I want more. Mm-hmm. And then that exponentially grows. And all of a sudden now you're like, hey, that was good. And so you say no to more of the other on the buffet in this world. And believe me, I've never seen, just like in the natural sense in America, the foods are being just stacked on buffets. I mean, just piled out there. Darkness is being piled out there. That's just, mm-hmm. that's actually a sign of our, you know, wanting just, and one of the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah was, you know, gluttony and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a sign of just saying, you know, we're just flesh oriented and we're not spirit oriented. The flesh counts for nothing, but the words I speak to you are spirit. And, you start getting hungry, and literally that little bit of hunger you have begins to grow exponentially, which empowers you by God's grace to begin to say no to, and next thing you know, you're walking out of captivity the way that Israel walked out of Egypt. You're walking out of those areas. And when you're hungry, God just begins to move on your behalf. You weren't waiting on God. God was waiting on you. But it's not until you become desperate enough to change will you see change or see transformation. I mean, today, one of the things that has happened is that time has sped up. And the information that I believe that we have, I think the studies show, and it's bigger than this because this is an old study,
mm-hmm.
but the information that passes our eyes and ears in one day that our great-great-grandfathers didn't have in a lifetime.
Yeah. Heard that.
The difficult thing is we got the same brain he has.
Yeah.
We have the same 24 hours that he has. And so we can't take all that in and think we're going to have room, you know, for the things of God. We got to be careful. We got to manage, you know, what we're going to take in. And sometimes even good things get in the way of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not until we want, think, and feel desperate to where we're ready to make that transformation and go after him with all of our everything we think, everything we want, everything we feel, wanting more of the Lord, that causes us to see his presence manifested, his glory manifested. And it makes me think about Charles Seymour on Azusa Street. This is a man, an African-American man who, in the midst of, this is like 1905, something of the nature, and much oppression, even the very ones that raised him up in the Lord rejected him, but he didn't stop. And then he wanted to see a move of God inside of a church gathering, and they just locked him out. They thought they would lose their salvation if they, you know, shared with him what they had to say. So they just kind of put a lock on the door.
Wow.
But William Seymour, and he just began. He rented a room in a house, and he began just to pray and fast. One man desperate for God, and eventually God responded. God responded eventually to one man's hunger for God. He became desperate for more of God. I think about, you know, the Brownsville revival in Pensacola, Florida, that you had, you know, I witnessed Brother John Kilpatrick's, you know, a spiritual father to me. Mm-hmm. I witnessed his hunger, his desperation for God, and his repugnance to anything else. It was just everything that just kind of became repulsive to him. Mm-hmm. You know, religion, you know, one more counseling session, to a staff that wouldn't listen, you know, mm-hmm. to, you know, he called us all together at one particular point, and there's, you know, quite a few of us. And he said, you know, he's basically put it down. You know, either you're going to walk right before God or you're off staff. Mm-hmm. And that's a real tough thing to do. And he's just, you know, he did that and he walked out of the room because this is a tough thing to do.
Right.
And then he was willing to even go to Canada, where the airport, you know, the Bob Arnock, God was moving in Canada. And Sister Brenda's wife had already been there already. And she was being touched by the power of God. And uh-huh. he was just like jealous because she's sitting here. They're sitting at a restaurant in Pensacola. And she's got the power of God all over her. And of course, she's all encouraged and stuff. And he's just getting really, you know, jealous. And finally, he's like, I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Canada. I'm going to go there because he was desperate. Mm-hmm. He was desperate. And it's not until you're desperate, you know, and much prayer, much brokenness, you know, he had just lost his mother, who he was loyal to the last second, to his mother, and single mother, single parent, and just was broken mm-hmm. and desperate. And on his way to Canada, all of a sudden he started experiencing what he thought was a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
But it wasn't. He went to the doctor in Tennessee or something, and on the way, whatever state it was, and he turned around and came back. He didn't go to Canada. And it's like God responded to that because he still was going through all these things, and, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, he poured his life out and you know, to an unresponsive people for so long. I mean, but I think it's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Somebody once told me, they said, listen, I don't want to be here, you know, where I was ministering, because if I'm here, that means I got to do something. I just want to go somewhere where I want to set.
Right.
Yeah, that just doesn't work for me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, I want to be a... Remember, we're going to be talking about Francis Chaneman. It's going to talk about that. But in that he was desperate for God. Mm-hmm. And there was another man. There was another man who was desperate for God. And he was willing to do anything for more of God. And he went all the way to England. And his name was Steve Hill. And he went over to an Anglican minister in England, and where God was pouring himself out. He began to talk to him, and the guy just touched him, and he fell on the power of God. And then so he began to come back with what God has given him. And so you had two desperate men, desperate for God.
Mm-hmm.
For more of the Lord. Think about it, two. I mean, William Seymour was one. Now you have two men desperate for God.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there that morning in the little small office as Steve was coming in, and he was going to minister that night. But Brother Kilpatrick just letting him minister that morning because he was just so disheartened. He's been through a lot at that point. And what's so cool is that you can be responsive like that, but God knows your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tells us to pray for Steve instead of pray for
instead of him.
And of course, we didn't have any idea where we're just going. You know, I was a few other men, Gary Hinkey, myself, and a few others. And we went to lay hands on Steve, and of course, God touched us, and he's just on fire. He's just like, just on fire. But Brother Kilpatrick had been so broken during this time, it didn't even, you know, and we didn't have a clue. You know, I didn't have a clue and what was about to happen, but it's Father's Day 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all go out and, you know, you take your places and the congregation is there and Steve begins to preach on the wonders of the Lord. And we're receiving that based off our own experiences, which means we weren't receiving it like he was saying it.
Right.
And not even Brother Kilpatrick was, because he's broken. You know, he's broken. This is not a negative place. If you're broken right now and you're just feeling like you need to be desperate for God, I'm telling you, this is what we're talking about today, that you're in the right place. Don't throw your hands up. Look at those that have gone before you and just realize that if you hang in there, God's about to move in your life. You wouldn't appreciate what God's about to do in your life if you hadn't gone through what you're going through and what you've gone through. And so he's preaching on the wonders of the Lord. And it was Father's Day 1995. Brother Kilpatrick was just going to, they were going to finish up and they were going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve says, I'm going to pray for you. And of course, when you want to leave, it's like, this is going to take forever. There's probably about 800, 1,200 people there maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that was not an emotionally satisfying feeling to Brother John Kilpatrick, because what he's going through, which is really cool, because it's authentic and he's real. And he had real things he had gone through, and only God knows, you know, his tenacity to hold on and not, you know, not leave. And then all of a sudden, as soon as he started laying hands on the congregation, the power of God came down, powerful way. And they're singing the song, the hands of the Lord, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. Those who run into it, you know, will be saved. And I'll never forget when Steve came by and just barely touched the top of my head, you know, my forehead or something, and said, more Lord. I literally got like a punch from the Holy Spirit, or an angel maybe just sought me out and just threw my body all the way back to this pew. And didn't hurt me, didn't do anything. It was the power of God. And that's what God would begin to just shake our world and rock our world. And of course, at that point, God's presence just manifested everywhere. Not that point with me, but that all of us. And then that, and Brother Kilpatrick was walking with Steve, kind of putting his hand on the back of him, like, yes, Lord, bless them. Yes, Lord, bless them. You know, like getting through that moment.
Yeah.
But then what started happening, he realized, this is God. And all of a sudden, his legs became rubbery. And he couldn't stand up, and they finally started helping him to the podium. He puts his right arm on the podium. He lifts himself up, and he says, "This is God. Get in." Something like that. "This is God. Get in. Get in. He's here." And all of a sudden, bam!
He's gone.
And I'm ready for about 90 days, 6 months, 3 years of that. Just don't pick me up. Let me just lay there. Let me recoup. And but you understand, there was two desperate men for God. And God brought two desperate men together. If you're desperate for all of God, hungry for God, listen, don't give up. Understand, this same Jesus, this same God is looking for someone who's hungry and thirsty for him. And he says, you will be filled. And when I think about it, you think about Charles Seymour, he got that room. They locked him out of the church gathering there on Azusa Street. And he went and rented a room. Now, Americans like, can God move if you actually rent a room from somebody?
Right. Said,
yeah, he can actually move. You're in the bush. Anyway, so then he began to cry out to God and fast and pray. And then next thing you know, he's there at Azusa Street and God is moving. So probably so humble that he put his head in a box, you know, at times when he would minister. Mm. And more missionaries, it's reported that more missionaries was launched in there than anywhere else in the world, from one man's hunger and one man's desperation. But it makes me think about King David and his desperation, but a little bit more about Charles Seymour, William Seymour, to understand it, that he began to share what God had on his heart. And the building that he was in, this particular ladies' church, her name was Sister Hutchinson. She didn't like what he had to say. And you have to get ready. Everybody's not going to like what... And we're going to continue this, too, by the way, in the extra hour, so don't panic. We're gonna continue on with this conversation. But so he... You know, this is what probably happens. Could you stand up and just share what the Lord has on your heart? You know, and then he shares what, you know, God's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So when he returns, when returning with him to the mission, that particular even, they found that Sister Hutchinson had padlocked the door. She was outraged and declared that she wouldn't permit such extreme teaching in her little mission on Santa Fe Street. So what happened was, because he couldn't get in there and continue to minister, God promoted him, and he eventually ended up at 312 Azusa Street. What they say about Azusa Street is, and this is the building he ended up in. You're thinking about, oh, I don't know if God can really move here because we don't have a PowerPoint and the carpet doesn't match. And listen, this is where God, this is Azusa Street. And this is what they say about Azusa Street. It was said that God's power could be felt at Azusa even outside the building. Scores of people were seen dropping into a prostrate position in the streets before they even reached the mission. That's the power of God. But let me describe to you the building that he had to go to because he got padlocked out of the other one. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't confront anybody because they thought you'd lose your salvation if you actually confronted people. Oh, wow. As if a padlock's not a confrontation, right? Can you imagine, like, I'm Sister Hutchinson. I'm the one that locked the man of God out. You know. Anyway. So this is this. Let me describe the building here. Don't worry. This is it's not your building. It's not anything. It's you. You know, how desperate is what I'm talking about these. You know, are you ready? Are you desperate? Are you hungry enough for God? And so this describes the building that he ended up in at 312 Azusa Street that sent out more missionaries. His ministry sent out more missionaries, they say, reportedly than anybody else since. Mm-hmm. The top floor was being used for storage. The bottom floor had been converted into a horse stable. So he's in a place where they had a horse, where the horse stable was converted. It was converted to a horse stable. The windows were broken and one electrical lamp light bulb was hanging from the ceiling. Not, you know, you think about it, we don't have the right kind of lighting here. He had one light bulb and it was a horse stable. And Seymour was offered the building for $8 a month. Lord, we just received that.
Yes.
We received that.
Yes.
And talking about getting hungry for God, getting hungry, desperate for God. And I'm thinking about, you know, King David here. And it looks like, you know, where we're coming at, that we're going to continue talking about King David into the extra hour because we don't we want to linger in this because we need to get desperate for the things of God. And you think, well, I'm not thirsty right now. But this is what happens is, I don't know if anybody's ever told you, drink 8 glasses of water a day. You'll lose weight. Not true.
Well, if you don't eat nothing.
Well, I just mix Coke in it. No messing with it. And, you know, drink 8 glasses of water a day. It's real strange because you're not, you can spend your life not thirsty, but all of a sudden when you start drinking water, you become thirstier. And your water body starts craving more water. And it's real weird because, you know, some people, they drink. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest issues probably in America is that it's dehydrated. By choice, it's dehydrated because we're drinking things like Cokes and things like that instead of just water. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to be 80% water, so hey. But understand this, that so that means that in the natural sense, if I drink water, I'll want water. Mm-hmm. If I drink more water, I'll want more water. And so starting to taste and see the Lord is good, beginning just to go spend some time with God, begin to abide with God. And we talk about this, and we'll talk about it more. You can find an abiding plan that we have for you that's real simple. It needs to be simple. I mean, this religious stuff is going to take you down. You need to go to iabide.org and request your free plan there. We've seen the simplicity of doing this and the lasting relationship that people have with God that empowers them outside of men and just works, you know, and request it today. But understand this, that Charles Seymour, William Seymour, was a man that was rejected by his very own spiritual father. He was rejected in the school. They had to he was an African-American man. They made him stand outside in the window. His desk was outside the window of the school so he can be trained. But he went through that humility, and he just did it.
Wow.
Which shows us that we need to humble ourselves before God. There's so many people that are trying to defend themselves and trying to save their reputation. It's like Jesus made himself of no reputation. And what kind of reputation did Joseph have? What kind of reputation did Jesus have? What kind of reputation did Paul have? What kind of think about it. The enemy creates a very bad reputation for those who walk in God, but it does. It's not a bad reputation in heaven.
Right.
It's just people trying to stop, you know, what God is doing. Listen, desperate, being desperate for the presence, being hungry for the glory of God. I'm going to talk to you at the beginning of the extra hour. As we continue this conversation about King David, because King David became desperate for the glory of God, so much so that he was willing to do whatever it took to be able to bring God's presence in. But I got to tell you, it matters how you do it.
Well, it's just more confirming of what, you know, God's been saying to me recently about the fear of the Lord. You know, matter of fact, when I'm talking about the chapter I'm in, it's talking about bringing in the glory.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
Yes.
You know, and that what's going to require is less of us.
Yes. Yes.
And getting out of darkness and
yes,
moving towards the light.
If you're just catching us here in the beginning of the extra hour, we've been talking in the first hour, and you can catch it by going and listen to the first hour at VFNTV.com or at on the torch at VFNTV.com and clicking on the torch or your app. But listen, God, you're not waiting on God. God's waiting on you. He's waiting on you to be hungry, have a desire for him, to want more of him, more of his presence, more of his glory. He wants you to want to be with him. He wants to be with you. He's proven it because he gave his life for you, but you got to have a desire to be with him. We gave some analogies in the first hour about that, but understand, don't give up. Look up. Understand that even in the midst of Egypt, when Israel was bound in Egypt into slavery, and they were into all kinds of dark things, their misery, they became so miserable where they were, they began to cry out. God didn't respond to their cry because they were perfect, because they were sinless, because he responded to their cry the way that one of the names of God means breasty one. And a mother of a newborn child has the ability to feed her child, breastfeed her child. And what happens is that when the child begins to cry, God's designed her in such a way that provision drops into the breast of the child's mother. And all of a sudden, if she doesn't go feed the child, she'll begin to hurt because so much provision has become available. And it was released because of the cry that was in the child's heart that was coming out of him. And if you want provision, if you want this move, this third great awakening, we're believing God for a third great awakening, you're going to have to begin to cry out and understand. Then you got to position yourself. And it's not just any way you do it, because quite often the mother wants the baby to nurse more than the baby wants to nurse because the baby doesn't understand. And the more that he's or she's crying, the more painful that she's getting in, because more provision is coming to the mother. And it's like, just drink the provision, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in the context of that you can't just receive any way you want to receive from God, but understand that you're crying out to God. God responds. If it's legitimately, I'm tired of this stuff. I'm tired of the bondage. I'm tired of this darkness. I'm tired of, you know, darkness, having the airways and doing these different things. I'm ready to be the light. I'm ready to stand up for God. I'm ready to go after God. I want more of God. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness will be filled. But you got to position yourself. You know, King David, he wanted the presence of God. He, you know, God had provided so much for King David, and he provided a nice place to live and all these different things. But, you know, he wanted God's glory. At that particular time, God's glory rested on the mercy seat between the cherubims on the ark. There was the Ark of the Covenant, and God would manifest his glory there, and that's where his glory would stay. And so David was going, hey, you know, I really want God to no longer be in that tent out there. I want him to be where I live. I want the glory of God to be where I live. And that is a wonderful desire for all of us to have. And listen, that's this next third great awakening is going to happen when God's people say, yeah, I'm not satisfied with God's presence being just out there. I want God's presence in my home, in my relationships, in my workplace and all that. So David goes out and gets some of his best men because he wants the glory of God. He's hungry for the glory of God. This is a man after God's own heart, in which God chose to be the leader over his people. And he goes out there and he gets some of his best building material, I'm sure, his big boards and big wheels, and builds a cart. And takes some of his best men, and they put the ark on this wooden cart, and they start rolling the ark of God's presence. And now imagine at that time, God's glory is dwelling between the cherubim. I mean, how dangerous that is, understanding how holy God is and his expectations that's going on. And people say that doesn't happen anymore. It's like, well, I bear to differ with you. I bear to differ with you because in the context of that, I have seen that I've seen people suffer great consequences.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Have we not?
We have.
So I was like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but the issue I have is the evidence of Ananias and Sapphira here, so we got to deal with this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so David goes and gets big wheels and big boards, which you can't, and you know, a cart, and they put God's glory, his ark, on a cart, and they start. He's got his best men here. You understand? This is David. And to be one of David's best men, you had to be a good man. I mean, he's just going to put anybody there. Mm-hmm. And they start wheeling this. You know, I'm going to do God a favor. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a church. I'm going to be a pastor. I'm going to be a prophet. I'm going to do God a favor. Okay, God, I'm going to do you a favor. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. And I'm going to allow you to come to where I live. And so then they start bringing the ark of God's presence, which you call the glory of God, on this wood boards and big wheels at this cart. And all of a sudden it hits like a hole. One of the wheels hits like a hole in the road or something, and it starts to fall. It looks like it's going to fall off. So one of his best men reach up to grab and balance it, which you think would be a good thing. He puts his hand on the ark. God's anger immediately began to burn against this David's good man with David's whole setup, and struck this man dead. Hmm. It was so tragic. David was so afraid. He was so angry. He was just terrified. All these emotions were going all over the place. And he just said, you know what? I'm going to just put God's glory in the building up the street. Go ahead and put the ark of God's presence in Obed-Edom's house. Mm-hmm. In other words, I was bringing it to my house, but I found out there was a price involved. Right. So I'm going to put him at his house. And Obed knew, if you understand the lineage of and what he stood, he knew what to do. So then David's going about his business. Just the thought of it put shivers up his spine. He don't know what happened. I mean, I know this guy was a good man. I don't know what happened, how he died out there. You know, I'm sure they'll tell him where this wooden cart is sitting somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm. And so in that he began to observe Obed-Edom's house. He began to observe the building up the street, and he started thinking, well, what's going on at that house? It's amazing. It's like, mm-hmm. his house is blessed. And his family's blessed. He's blessed. And so David started thinking, I want God's presence. This time he's like, you know, I do want God's presence. And became jealous. He wanted God's presence. He became jealous of what was happening at Obed-Edom's house. He said, that was my original want, probably. But now he's already seeing this is what's going on at Obed-Edom's mm-hmm. house. And so he's going, you know, but this time I'm so desperate. And this is a different desperation now. The first desperation was, hey, this is a great idea. I love God. He called me. This is where I should be. This is where I should work. Mm-hmm. Now this time he's so desperate. And this is how the church said, you have to get this desperate. You have to get this desperate. He said, I'm going to read my Bible.
Wow.
Did he not?
He did.
He's like, I'm going to read the scriptures, and I'm going to study the word of God and find out how God's presence, how his glory is supposed to be handled.
All right.
And what he found out, first of all, that boards and big wheels don't bring in God's glory. Mm-mm. You got all these big wheels out there and all these boards. We're the board of direct. What? Right?
Yeah.
And he found out that if he's going to bring in, I mean, if William Seymour hit his head in a box in a barn with one light bulb and God shook the world, do you really think it's a big wheel? Do you think you need to be a bigger wheel for it to happen? Do you think you need to be a board needs to even touch it? Hey, Alan took what he was supposed to do to a board. And God was telling him to get on the radio, and he didn't want to. You know, if you want to kill something, take it to a board who people who don't, or, you know, that they're not serving that particular,
right.
going to kill what God is doing. And he said, and so of course they go, no. And so he goes, fine, I don't have to do it. Great. And then God rebukes him and says, what are you doing taking what I told you to do to a board?
Right.
To a man. Mm-hmm. And then he did it. And of course, now we know the history of A.A. Allen. And so it's just a desperate man, a hungry man. And so David was, you're going to get this. This is going to shock you. He was so desperate he wanted, so, and he was so jealous. And that's what I was talking about in the first hour about, you know, Brother John Kilpatrick with the Pensacola Brownsville Revival, when he saw others and he saw his wife, Sister Brenda, having the presence of God. He's like, I want that. You know, mm-hmm. he was so honest, you know, he's like right. jealous.
All right.
And, but you got to get so hungry, so desperate. You're going to have to do this. This is going to shock you. Oh my goodness. It's going to shock you. You're going to have to read your Bible. You're wow. going to have to abide with God.
Yeah.
You're going to have to talk to God. Because if you go doing exactly what David did, even if you're chosen by God and you just try to do God a favor, understand in the context of that, that you could end up dead on the highway out there. Mm-hmm. You could be one of the big wheels that get, you know, hurt. You can be one of the boards that get destroyed. You could be one of the good men who end up dead on the highway we're talking about today. You can set up signs and wonders moving in your life. You can be a sign and wonder that helps us keep our life straight. Right. Don't do that.
You don't want to be that one.
Right. And so this is how desperate you got it. 81%, according to George Barna, don't even read their Bible. Right?
That's right.
81% who profess to be Christians in America, which I believe are regular church attenders every other week, don't read their Bible. They don't read their scriptures. But you know what they would say? That's you. Would you say? You go, well, I want God's glory. I want that. I want some of that healing. Give me some of that.
Right.
Like, you sure, Uzzah? You sure, Ohio? You really want this stuff? You know, it could kill you. Mm. Right?
That's right.
I would like to think differently, but we've been to the funerals. We've been to the consequences. And it's like, but understand that if you're sincere and you're going after God, God's glory will not hurt you. It'll protect you. Mm-hmm. But they feared coming amongst their number. That's the church. They fear coming amongst their number. And so he read the Bible, he read scriptures, and the scriptures said of God's presence, his ark, the ark has to be carried on the priests, the shoulders of the priests. That's the only way it could be carried. Well, understand that if you get your life right with God, you give your heart to God, and you get discipled and all that, realize that you are a holy nation, a royal priesthood, and that if you this is for all of us now. And that with that, you, like David, begin to prepare. This is what he did. He set up a whole procession, and he was so desperate for God that he was willing to read the Bible. He was willing to read the scriptures and do exactly what the Lord said. And when he did that, the priests carried the ark of God's presence, glory, on their shoulders. He marched in front. He danced in front of them, so much so he made such a public reality of his desperation for God that he didn't care if anybody saw him. You can't have this like, oh, I just don't want nobody to know, but I do want more of God. I want to have this private encounter. For what? Mm-hmm. I mean, why do you need more of God if you're not going to give what he's giving you away?
That's right.
This is not about you. This is about him. It's about, hey, I'll give it to you if I can get it through you, but if you're not going to do anything with what my presence, it's like the business analogy we talked about in the first hour.
Right.
But what's the point? And so understand, he's like, he didn't care if anybody, and here he is, the head dude. I mean, he is the, if you're so worried about what you look like and you're thinking that your congregation won't accept you or your church won't accept you, your family won't accept you, you know, if you go after God with everything, with a holy desperation, guess what's not going to happen in your life? It's pride, it's self-absorption. You're thinking about you. It's all about you. You got to humble yourself like William Seymour, humble yourself like David did. And he's saying, you know what? What's happening at Obed-Edom's house? I want that to happen. I want my home to be blessed. And so in that, he wants a differentiation. Listen, this is what makes us different. It's the presence of God in our life. Not that we have a Bible. It's just the God in the Bible is in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the priests began to carry the glory of God on their shoulders. He was dancing. He danced so hard and so publicly. And every 6 feet, he had a sacrifice made where they're literally were shedding blood sacrifice on this journey of bringing God's presence. And listen, for us, it's a sacrifice of praise and worship, and we give until it hurts, not just finances, give of ourselves, just give everything to God and lay it out there. And he danced so hard that his clothes came off, except for whatever basic clothes. And his wife told him, he says, you know, you're making a fool of yourself. He says, listen, I'll do whatever I got to do for God. It doesn't matter to me at all. Right. And it cost her dearly in the context of that, where she became unfruitful and fertile. But understand that this is where we have to be, is desperate for God's glory. He got jealous. He wanted more of God, so much so that he was willing to read the scriptures. And like I was saying, 81% of self-professing Christians, according to George Barna, are not even reading the scriptures at all. The 19% that are reading the scriptures, only 3% of those would actually respond as David did in the second go-around of bringing in the glory of God. Mm-hmm. They're the only ones that would actually do it the way God said do it. There's only 3% of that 19% that are making adjustments in their life based on what God says. In other words, they're doing what he said. David read the scriptures, found out what God said, and he just did it. He just totally did it. And it makes me think of Francis Chan. And you got to hear this. You got to hear this makes such good sense. Listen to Francis Chan.
You know, it's just so strange to me what we do in church sometimes with the commands of God. When you were a kid, remember playing Simon Says, you know, or Follow the Leader. Remember Follow the Leader? Some of you that are younger never played it because you can't get the app on your iPhone. But it was something physical. We used to go out and play, you know. We used to move. And you remember Follow the Leader, you know. Leader jumps, you jump, you know. Or Simon says, pat your head, and you pat your head. It's so weird how in the church we change everything. In the church, you know, follow Jesus has become a different game where in following Jesus, you don't actually have to do what he does. You just have to study it. Jesus says is completely different from Simon Says. If Jesus says something, you just have to memorize it or study it. What about making disciples? What about actually becoming like Jesus? Man, I've got four kids, and if I asked one of my kids, if I told my oldest daughter, hey, Rachel, go clean your room. And what if she comes back to me, you know, an hour later and goes, Dad, I memorized what you said. I can quote it verbatim. In fact, I can say it in the Greek now. She knows I'm not going to go, oh, that's awesome, baby. Or if she says, Dad, I had a bunch of friends over and we did a little study on what it would look like if we cleaned my room. Here's all the notes. It's going to be a 5-week study. You guys, she knows that doesn't fly with me. You guys, why were these commands given? Was it for us to memorize and study and on and on and on and just study them to death? And then at the end of our lives, we're going to go, God's going to say, wait, I asked you to make disciples. I asked you to baptize. How many people did you lead to the Lord? How many people did you teach to obey everything? Because that's what I asked you to do while you were on that earth.
And that's just so important. That's exactly what David did. That's what Francis Chan is saying. That's what I'm telling you. That's what those that have gone before us have done. What is his book, Crazy Love?
Crazy Love.
Oh, powerful, powerful.
Awesome.
Oh, my goodness. And it's just time for us to realize this awesome God who is creator of the universe loves us and has a plan for us, and he's sent his son to die for us so we could be in relationship with him. How could we not give him everything in this thing called a vapor of life? Listen, he's not holding anything back. He's just waiting for us to want him.
That's right.
All of him.
That's awesome.
And so the thing is that, well, what do we do? Just begin to hang with God. That's what the disciples did. He said, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. He didn't say, follow me, and you will be fishers of men. He said, follow me, and I'll make you a fisher of men, which means just begin to follow Jesus. Abide with him. He says in John, Jesus says now in John chapter 15, the Gospel of John chapter 15, in that particular, the Gospel of John, he says, the Father's the gardener, I am the vine, you are the branches. If he wants us to bear more fruit, he will prune us back, even good things. He'll cut things out of our life. We'll have to give some stuff up. Listen, if you want to go on with God, you're going to have to be willing to give some stuff up, even good stuff. But he says, if you don't abide with him, if your branch comes off of the vine, he says, then you're only good for the fire. Mm. So those branches will be thrown in the fire, which is obviously.
Right.
But he says, if you can abide in me and my word abide in you, you can ask whatever you wish and you will get it, because this is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit. But it's impossible to bear fruit if you don't abide in me. So abiding, staying in God, but the word abide, understand what that means is that we define that as this, spending time with the Lord. That's all he told the disciples, just follow me. Spending time with the Lord and reading the scriptures, soaking in his word. Don't try to read 10,000 scriptures a day, because you cannot ingest. It's living, it's active, it's so much bigger than your mind can comprehend. That's why if God's word frustrates the intellect of the intellectual, it frustrates the worldly wisdom, because how can this man know three verses and God use them so powerfully? Because those verses know him. Mm. The word knows him. But soaking in his word, spending time with the Lord, reading, soaking his word. You can find out about this, what I'm talking about. I abide. That's the letter I, just like iPhone, iPad, iTunes, iabide.org. Got a simple plan for you to be able to do this. Then share your heart with the Lord. Share your heart, talk with him. That's what the disciples did. They just talked with him back and forth. What's going on? This, what happened? They asked all kinds of questions, and Jesus would answer them. And he wants a relationship with you. This is what he says. He says, my sheep know my voice and they follow none other. Which means you're going to have to hear God. And you do that by spending time with you learn how to listen to God. And you share your heart with him. Then, this is an interesting concept to today's church. Sort of like, you know, Francis Chan was talking about with his daughters. Then you do what he says. And we do like David. David studied the scriptures and he did what the Lord said. He did what the scriptures said and he did it in the reverential fear and he didn't care what anybody thought about it. And then understand that's when we begin to see God, the fullness of God in our life, the full measure of Christ is in our life. That's why he gives apostles, pastors, teachers, and evangelists to train us up for our works of service till we reach the full measure of Jesus Christ. So we're no longer tossed back and forth by every wind of doctrine and the cunningness and schemes of men, but instead we build each other up as each part does its work. You have a destiny in God. You're called in God to do something very specific and to function. And imagine if a body is not functioning because it's missing a lung or a liver, or it's missing a kidney, or it's missing a heart, or it's missing, you know, vocal cords, or it's missing, I don't know, but think about it. And you're that part. And the enemy want to hold you back from your destiny. But if you begin to move and function in your role, what God's called you to be, understand how healthy the body of Christ will be when you're functioning like that. But it all comes from hungering for him, for more of him. Just like David did. The big question is, you know what? When David did that, when he went back, he was so hungry and so desperate, he began to read the scriptures and do what God said, and God honored him. He's willing to sacrifice everything, his reputation and everything. It already cost him a lot when he began the journey, but now he's willing to sacrifice everything because he wanted God. He wanted more of God. God's glory came with him and stayed with him. No longer was it just in the building up the street, but now God's glory was with him. You know, Moses said, when God was going, listen, I am out of here, Moses. I mean, these folks, we're going to begin again with you. I just can't look at these guys anymore because they've done so much evil in my face. And of course, Moses said, listen, the only thing that differentiates us from anybody else is your presence.
That's right.
It's your glory. This is why the world is confused right now when the church calls itself the church. They're confused because God's not with the church. His glory is not, yes, he is. You know, you have some sort of theological conversation. It's like, no, he's not, because if he was, this is what would be happening,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, yeah.
But the difficult thing is when God's presence shows up, when his glory shows up, and we choose not to deal with things, his very presence deals with those things. And so it's in a reverential fear of going before God and saying, you know, God, whatever. What about you? Where are you in this equation? Where are you? Are you so desperate? Are you so tired of all the things that you're seeing promulgated and being said, so desperate and so rejected, and all these things that have happened in your life, and you've tried everything, and this generation has tried everything. Everything. Has seen everything, done everything, and tried everything.
Yeah.
And it's not satisfying. So much so that this generation is beginning to invent things. Maybe this will do it. They'll begin to create this and create that and make this and make that. Maybe that'll do it. Maybe this will do it. Maybe this new technology will do it. Maybe that will do it. And they find every single time the reality, the only one, God has put a holy dissatisfaction in every one of us that can only be satisfied with more of God. Which is exciting because this very thing you're wanting to be satisfied will be satisfied when you go after God. Imagine your satisfaction being complete. Imagine it being full. Imagine just living your life in the presence of fullness, of satisfaction. No matter what happens, you know, gain or loss, you're just satisfied because you've got the fullness of God in your life. That's where you can be. A holy dissatisfaction for where we are, saying, listen, I want more of God. Are you ready to become so dissatisfied with where things are in your life, in your marriage, in your family, in your personal walk with God, in your relationships, in your gathering, in your church gathering, in your business, in your country, in your state? Are you ready to say, you know what? If you could do all that with William Seymour, a desperate man for you. If you can do all that with King David, a desperate man for you. If you can do all that with Brother John Kilpatrick and Steve Hill, two desperate men for God. And it goes on and on and on. Think about what he can do with you if you just say, you know what, God? I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready. How does it start? It starts with this. When Jesus looks at you and he says, follow me. Mm-hmm. Follow me. Follow me does not mean bring all your luggage and everything and just say, hey, you know, I'm going to follow you, but I'm carrying all these gods and idols. And yeah, no, it means letting go of everything, dropping your nets, letting the dead bury the dead, and just saying, God, I'm going after you. I'm going after you. And let me tell you something. Powerful things happen when you go after God, because if you draw near to God, he will draw near to you. I'm talking about desperate for his glory. Then let me tell you something. When God's presence shows up, things change. Nations change. Cities change. Families change. As I began to talk about in the beginning of the first hour, that, you know, believe God. You know, we're told in Revelation that, you know, Babylon falls in a day, and all these ships sit out at a distance, and they watch her smoke go up, and they say she made the kings drunk on her thing. But understand, yeah, a nation can fall in a day, but you know what? A nation can also be saved in a day. Mm-hmm. In a day, a nation can be saved. And I just want to encourage you, begin to change your paradigm. Turn away from the dark media. Turn away from the dark influences. Turn away from the world's buffets and turn to God and begin to say, you know what? My God owns a cattle on 1,000 hills. Greater is my God. Who is this uncircumcised Philistines to come against the armies of God? I know that greater is he that's in me than he that's in this world. Our God is greater. Our enemies' hills melt like wax in our Lord's presence. Our God wins our battles. Begin to believe, God, that America, the nation, can be won in a day, that a family, a city can be won in a day. I mean, you think about it. It makes me really think about, you know, that song City on the Language in Heaven. I mean, just think about this. Just think about it in a day.
Oh, God. Does anyone believe that God can take a nation?
I believe you, God. I believe you,
God. A nation in a day.
In a day. In a day.
Does anyone believe that God can take a city?
Yes, Lord.
A city in a day. Does anyone believe that God can take a family?
Does anyone believe it?
A family in a day.
The thing is, he's looking for people to believe him. You know, take a city, take a nation, take a family. Listen, God can do this. He's just looking for William Seymour. He's looking for a Steve Hill. He's looking for another Brother John Kilpatrick. He's looking for you. He's looking for somebody who's just so, he's looking for a David that says, you know what? I tried it the first time. I'm going to go back and I'm going to get in the word and I'm going to do it the right way this time, but I'm not going to give up because I'm totally dissatisfied and I'm jealous of what's going on. Begin to believe God. And just doesn't matter. You don't have to figure out how God's going to win the battle. You just have to know that he will win the battle when we stand up. I mean, think about it. That God's power, his ability, he gives us the air that we breathe. You don't think that he can take the air out of the lungs of somebody he wants to take the air out of the lungs?
That's right.
You don't think all of a sudden he could just change the economy because he manifests gold in a particular place, or he can change leadership or change the heart of the present leadership? I mean, he can do anything. He's looking for his people who will stand up for him and go after him and be desperate for more of him, that believes that he truly is God, and above him that there's none other, that's unashamed of him. And we, and understand, you think about it, when God wanted to be able to save Israel, because he saved them and they went back. He saved them and they went back from what he saved them from. He saved them, they went back. So he's all of a sudden he's saying, you know what? I'm going to do this differently this time, because every time I save them, they were actually taking credit for it. I'm going to go find me somebody. And he goes to find somebody that his name is Gideon. And Gideon was just eking out a living. What does that mean? If you're eking out a living, you're thinking, how can I survive? And there's so much strife going on. That, hey, you qualify. And so when the angel came to Gideon, this is the processes of God, where God was getting ready to deliver a nation. A nation. We're talking about a nation in a day, but to deliver a nation here. And so he looks at Gideon and he says, mighty man of valor. I mean, you think about it. You know, come on. I'm in here eking out a living. Don't tell anybody I'm here. Too loud. And first of all, I am not the mighty man of valor. I am the weakest and the least of my entire family. Not only the weakest and the least tribe, but I'm the weakest and the least in the weakest and the least tribe. I'm just like, I'm not.
Right.
Don't worry. God uses the things that are not to nullify the things that are. Understand, he went and found the weakest and least person, least likely. And you think about William Seymour, if you know his history and you study him, and you can study him at godgenerals.com, understand this, that he was the least likely in the eyes of men, but he was the most likely in the eyes of God, just like David was, just like Gideon was. And so God began to, first he did, when he called Gideon, he began to send a prophet and review what God had done. You got to learn and remember the things of God. You got to go back, and God reviewed all their history, sent a prophet and reviewed everything. And then God looked at Gideon and said, hey, I'm going to use you and you're going to deliver this nation. It's like, I was just trying to get some bread on the table tonight.
Yeah.
You know, I was just looking for some change, for some gas. You know, how's this going to work? And he says, I'll tell you what, you know, if you're a little nervous, you know, get close to the ones that you're afraid of. Get real close to the strife. Get real close to the Midianites.
Mm-hmm.
And just listen to them. I mean, think about it. All of a sudden, He's wondering, hey, should I even do this? And now he's telling me to get confirmation. I got to go get close to the ones that I was concerned was going to kill me in the first place. And the very ones that was causing me to eke out a living in a wine press that oppressed us for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's saying, get close to them so you can overhear their conversation, which took a lot of nerve in itself to be able to do that, because he was in a wine press when he was first found.
Right.
And others were hiding in caves, and every time they would get a little something going, you know, something was going, the Midianites would come in, and they would stomp out all their savings account, stomp out their motor in their car, or their vehicle, or their house, or their home, or their job. You know, these kind of things were happening to them. I mean, obviously in the car, but their livelihood would get stomped out every single time. And so they were just hiding in caves and just trying to get by. But understand, their sin brought them to that place. It wasn't like hard times hit because God wanted hard times to hit. No, they've sinned and turned their backs on God. And he says, when I send a plague, when I send famine, I send drought, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray. So they got that way because they were in sin, but God responded to their cry. He's raising up a deliverer. He tells the deliverer, which is the weakest and the least, Gideon, you know, go down there. Go down close to the ones that I'm going to use you to destroy and listen to them to build your confidence up. And I'm telling you, if you just listen, understand that the words that we speak are spirit. So when you're hearing people talk, you're hearing what their heart is full of, but you're also hearing the spirit thereof. And it's just really surprising. It's like, oh my goodness, where is that coming from? Mm-hmm. And so he got close, and God had given one of them a dream, one of the many nights a dream, and they're talking to each other. And it's a dream about this barley loaf, you know, always talk about raisin loaf, but a barley loaf. And it came down like a big log or whatever, started rolling down and rolling over the people. And so he's listening to one guy tell the other guy about this dream, which imagine how close that had to be.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. If, you know, God's called you, just do what he says. And the guy interpreted the dream right there in front of, near earshot of Gideon, and says, oh my goodness, that's Gideon. That means Gideon's going to destroy us. And then you're like, now tell me, how logical is that? You know, get your head out of this. I I'm not in my own head. So I don't want to be in your head. Okay.
All right.
This is outside of our ability, outside of our intellect. This is faith in God. And so they concluded that this barley loaf was Gideon, and Gideon was going to destroy them. So they had this fear of Gideon that was already in their hearts. Don't go around going, listen, I know you had a barley loaf. That's not me. I'm not, you know, I'm the weakest and the least. And all of a sudden you start running your mouth when God wanted to put a fear of God in their hearts for what he's about to do through Gideon, and let God do what he's going to do. And then Gideon makes a call, and then thousands of people show up, and it's like, okay, we're ready to do this thing. It's making sense right now. And because in the past that men had taken credit for what God had done, he was going to narrow it down to a small group of people. Thousands he sent away, people that were terrified. They went through hard places and different things, and thousands left, thousands, 10,000 here, I think 30,000 there. To suddenly, God pointed out 300 of them. 300 of them that were so desperate to be delivered from the strife and the drought of God's presence and the bondage that they were under. They were willing to do whatever it took and what God was going to do. And they basically were going to do whatever Gideon said, and Gideon was going to do whatever God said. And God released a plan, a specific plan. And you have to understand, this has got to be outside of your head, because it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with your faith and what God is going to tell you to do. And what he told for this particular case was, gave Gideon a plan with, tell the guys to take a sword and to take a torch and take a clay pitcher that kind of surrounds the torch where people can't see it, and trumpets, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was trumpets, not a sword.
Right.
And then to go get on three flanks, pick up three different groups of 100, and just do what I tell you to do. I want you to smash the jars and blow the trumpets and say a sword for the Lord and a sword for Gideon.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
How does that make sense? These are people that have been killing people, stealing all the stuff. And it's like, what happens is you're pointing your finger at God. You're saying this, God's about to deliver you. God's about to deliver us from you. You're going down, brother. I got news for Satan. I got news for the giants, that you're coming down in Jesus' name.
Right.
And in that, when they did that, the fear was already established by God in these guys' heart about Gideon. When they said a sword for the Lord and a sword for Gideon, that's the barley loaf. That's the dream. So God will already be working in their hearts and understand that he's about to deliver a people. And listen, don't be Holy Spirit. You can't be Holy Spirit. Allow the Holy Spirit to do what he does. You just speak to people and listen, that's God. They're not going to be able to get away from that word. It'll be all over them until they respond or harden their hearts against it. And in the context of that, when they did that, the enemy that normally turned on them turned on themselves and began to destroy themselves. And what happened? A nation was won in a day.
Yeah.
A nation was won in a day, and God got the glory for it. Listen, it is possible. Begin to believe God that a nation can be won in a day, that a city can be won in a day, that a family can be won in a day, a suddenly that just comes. But he's looking for Gideons. You know, he's looking for Davids. He's looking for those that'll stand up and say, you know what? Here I am, God, send me. Use me, Lord. He looks for a man to stand in the gap so he wouldn't have to destroy the land. God's desire is not to bring destruction. God's desire is to bring salvation and to rescue us, but we have to turn to him and want him, being desperate for God, being desperate for the Lord. And I just want to encourage you today. That's you. Begin to change your paradigm. Begin to change your paradigm and how you see things, and realize greater is he that's in you, if you're a Christian and believer, than he that's in this world. I just got to quit eating from the buffets of the world and start dining on manna. dining on the Word of God. I got to begin to abide with God. And if you need that abiding plan, don't forget, we have one for you at iabide.org. You go there, read a little bit, request your free plan. It comes to you right away. The free plan comes to you right away. And you'll have a in your email, and you'll be able to begin right away. Videos and all that kind of stuff to help you begin to do what we're seeing even 8-year-olds doing. You've just been listening to the highlights from the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Don't forget to share it with your friends. Find out more and listen to the daily VFN radio program in its entirety at VFNTV.com or with your mobile VFN TV app on your mobile phone or device. That's VFNTV.com.